My name's Judy, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Judy.
Thanks, everybody, for being here tonight. We're going to just take a minute and have a little moment of silence, and then we're going to say the serenity prayer together for anybody that wants to join in. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and on the small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving about the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I'm now going to read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we're on step 11. So if you would you join with me and please welcome our panel this evening. Jada and Nicole have come here to be with us tonight, and we're excited to have them with us. They're just going to give you a little introductory statement about themselves in AA.
Hi, I'm Jada. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jada.
Hey, Jada.
And my sobriety date is March 5th, 2010. And my home group, it's actually a new meeting. It's not on the schedule yet, but it's the Friday night sober at 7. And we meet at King's Grant Presbyterian Church, 745 Little Neck Road in Virginia Beach. Can you hear me?
No.
That's better?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, my name is Nicole. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Nicole.
Hey, Nicole.
And, my sobriety date is March 15th, 2003. And right now I don't have a home group. So there you go. But you can generally find me on a couple different meetings if you really want to find me. It's not that hard. But I do attend the principals group in Chesapeake on a fairly regular basis, and another meeting in Chesapeake called the Big Book Study, or Chesapeake Big Book or something. It's on Sunday at 5:30 in South Norfolk. So, and if you're really that interested in that kind of, I will gladly give you my phone number if you want to talk. So, and you can ask me about anything, not just step 11. Okay.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, and tonight we are going to start on page 85 in the book. If you have your book with you and you want to follow. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer, better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have a proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken.
Well, I'd be lying if I say that I read this paragraph every night before I go to bed, but that's the goal. And, you know, I know when I first got sober, I would read this paragraph, and I would answer yes to almost all of those questions. And I remember calling my sponsor and saying, you know, do you ever read that and say no to all those questions? You know, am I resentful? No. Am I selfish? No. Was I dishonest? No. And she said, you know, she'd been sober about 30 years and said she remembers a couple times, but that's because she was sick at home and didn't talk to anyone that day. And I love that, you know, because this for me has been a process, and I'm not going to do it perfect all the time. And I love the book, how they didn't leave anything out. You know, the fact that they put that statement, you know, we must not drift into morbid reflection is perfect for me, you know, because I can just beat myself up, you know, not see the good thing in myself or situation and not focus on, you know, any kind of accomplishments. Just look at what I didn't do that day, what I didn't get to, you know, how I did this wrong or that wrong. But, you know, that's part of my nature, and I love that it says we'll be thinking of ourselves most of the time, because even that, when I do drift into that morbid reflection, it's because I'm thinking about myself all day long. So again, I do try to do this on a, you know, daily basis, and, you know, sometimes it's in my own kind of wording, but I absolutely, you know, 5 years ago, there wouldn't be a day that went by that I wouldn't be able to say no. And actually, last night when I was reading this, there were some no's on there, and it was amazing that you know, how much has changed, I guess. And that's it. Thanks.
Hi. This is my little big book, and when I just let it fall open, it falls open to page 86. So, you know, this is important to me, step 11. You know, it says we shouldn't be shy about this, you know. And this is an extremely personal thing, so I'm going to share my experience with it, but, you know, do whatever is working, you know. I can tell you that my experience has been that when I am completely insane, the paragraphs that we're going to read tonight are a thing that will bring me back to the center more quickly than any other readings that I do, and I do other readings. So, you know, if it works, if we have the proper attitude and work at it. You know, what is the proper attitude? That I'll try, you know, that I'm willing, that I'm not bad, that I'm going to do something different. And I started doing this when I was in the process of making amends. You know, at my very first amends, my sponsor said, okay, now we start practicing step 10, 11, and 12. And I said, well, what does that mean? You know, I'm not, you know. And she would suggest that I do this, and I would just say, I'm not doing that. You know, that's me, you know. Why don't you go home and sit quietly after you write your inventory? I'm not doing that. Why don't you write inventory? I'm not doing that. Why don't you turn your life over to the care of God? I'm not doing that. You know, I'm not doing it. So she told me that I needed to call her every morning and night for 2 weeks, and that we would do this together. And I'm just going to say that that has been a very valuable practice for me as an alcoholic, just to do this with someone. because it helps prevent my drifting off into morbid reflection, you know. At the end of the day, I can quickly say, yes, I was resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid. I am every single day just about, you know, at least one of them. Do we owe an apology? Yeah, probably. Have we kept some to ourselves? Maybe. Were we kind and loving toward all? All? No. What could we have done better? Ooh. Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Does that mean 51%? Because yes. Were we thinking of what we could do for others? No. You know, oh, I'm the worst person on earth. I might as well just go kill myself. You know. So when I do this with someone and we say, were we resentful? Were we resentful? And I can say, well, yeah, it was. I got really irritated with somebody at work today because they looked at me wrong, and you know how I am about that. And, you know, and then somebody, you know, somebody took my little silver bucket. They didn't give it back to me in time, and blah, blah, blah. And then they tell me what they were resentful about, and we laugh. And it begins to ease this thing that I do as an alcoholic where I separate myself from you. One of the most dangerous things for an alcoholic to do is to have a bunch of secrets. And I know what it's like to do that in sobriety, and it's extremely uncomfortable. So this is just a little way for me to practice getting honest and telling somebody else about how my day was. You know, do I do this every day? No. You know, do I do this on a regular basis? You know, I don't even really do this part on a regular basis. But when I do it, I enjoy it, so I don't know why I don't do it more, you know. But I'm not very good at this. I'm not very disciplined. And that's what this is about. I'm not a very disciplined person. I will say, too, though, one of my favorite things about this is that it starts with the nighttime. Clearly, Bill knew that we would not do it the next day if we didn't start the very day we read it. You know, start now. This is action at once. Before you go to bed, just try this. And then when you wake up, try this. Because I'm the kind of alcoholic that will say, oh yeah, I'm going to do that tomorrow, and never do it. And so being able to start practicing step 11 at once the night I read it was also a valuable thing for me to practice. So,
thank you.
Thank you. So we're going to continue, we're going to go to 86, the next page, on awakening. Let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We're often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still and experienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it.
You know, I like what was said about the, you know, talking about retiring at night before on awakening, you know, because I can still sometimes create a lot of problems in a day that carries on to the next day, you know, like the emotional hangover. And I'm probably better at reading this part and remembering to do it in the morning, because I do now have kind of a regimen of morning prayer, which that in itself is amazing to me, because like someone else mentioned, you know, I really resisted the idea of prayer. I was resistant, but I knew that I had to have a conscious contact with God, so I was desperate enough where I was willing to try it. And, you know, I was kind of had that belief that, well, I tried prayer once and it didn't work, so I'm not doing it anymore. And I remember being a couple weeks sober and just distraught and beside myself and just feeling real hopeless, not believing in AA, not believing in a God, not believing in anything. Calling my sponsor, and it was like only 9 o'clock in the morning. Like, I don't think I can, you know, go any further. And she's like, Jade, it's 9 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, yeah, I know. You know, and her asking me if I prayed, you know, and it was the last thing I would think of in my little repertoire of very few tools at the time. You know, of course, my first one was to drink. Second one might be, you know, to call someone. But way down at the bottom was asking God for help, because I did not have initially I had no belief in God, and I definitely didn't have a practice of prayer. And then even if I did, I didn't believe that there was a God that was going to do anything about it. I didn't think he was just sitting up there waiting like, oh, what's Jada going to say? I can't wait to hear what she has to say. So I just didn't believe in it, you know, but I saw that it worked in other people. And I, you know, I think maybe being like an engineer, this was good because it was like a set list of what to say. You know, if I had to dream up something, I'm sorry, if I had to dream up something on my own, like I was laughing with Judy, she prayed with us before this meeting and just gave this beautiful prayer from her heart. And, you know, and I'm more someone like, okay, show me what to read. Like, show me what to read and I'll follow that. So again, this for me was one of my first prayers, this passage on page 86. You know, when I do read this today, I try to read each sentence and kind of pause and think about what I just read. And I love the second paragraph where it talks about, in thinking about our day, we face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. Now, that was never in my vocabulary. Anything about relaxing, it's like, no, react, figure this out, struggle, you know, run over people to get what I need to get. These people aren't doing it the right way. I'm not getting answers fast enough. You know, rather than just pausing and just waiting, because sometimes, you know, especially like in my early sobriety, I would be just so upset about something, and my sponsor would say, Jada, just go to a meeting. And I'm like, well, what is a meeting going to do about this or this or this or this? And it made no sense to me. It seemed counterintuitive, like, well, no, I need to address this situation. I need to fix it. And I looked back, you know, a year after I got a year sober, I looked back and I realized there was nothing else she could tell me, that sometimes the answer only is prayer and just to wait and to sit and to do the next right thing. And I hated that next right thing because I didn't know what the right thing was. I had no idea what the right thing was. And today, you know, I don't always know, but most of the time I do know. You know, and I would laugh because I used to, you know, be kind of stuck on the first three steps, and it was suggested to work on the 11th step, and it's like, well, I'm not there yet. And I heard someone say in a meeting that that's about as ridiculous as saying, like, well, I'm not going to do the sixth commandment, like it's okay to murder people, because I'm not there yet. So no matter where I am in my program, I can start doing this, you know, and it gives me simple directions on how to pray. Because, I did not know how to pray. I had no idea. And then I think I had these expectations that I'm supposed to pray in this great thing is supposed to happen, and I'm supposed to immediately feel this conscious contact with God, and that wasn't how it happened for me. You know, it took a while, And again, I'm undisciplined as well, but I see the benefits and the results of doing that now. And, you know, I wouldn't go a day without praying. It's just something that I just do now, which is amazing as well.
That's it. Thanks. So, on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. Us, there it is again. This implies that maybe I'm going to do it with somebody else. And when my sponsor suggested that, I said, I'm not doing that. You know, I mean, that's basically my response to every spiritual action that I am told to try. Is I'm not doing it. And then I begin to do it and things get a little bit different. But much earlier in the book, it says, in Bill's story on page 13, it says, I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. I was to sit quietly when in doubt, asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. Never was I to pray for myself, except as my request bore on my usefulness to others. Then only might I expect to receive, but that would be in great measure. And that basically kind of sums up what we're talking about now. This whole idea of asking God to direct my thinking, but then believing that under those conditions I can use my brain with assurance, because God gave it to me to use, is an idea that implies that I'm going to be testing this new thinking. So I'm going to test my intuitive thought. Sometimes I'll have the sense that I need to go somewhere or do something, and I don't know why. You know, go to that meeting, you know, over in Portsmouth or something. Well, why? I don't know. And I'll say, well, I'm not going to do that. And then I'll just go along about my day, and then at about 5:30 it comes again, you got to go to the meeting in Portsmouth, and I go, I don't know. And then eventually I go to the meeting in Portsmouth, and something amazing happens. Now, I can tell stories of when that happened, and it was really cool. You know, I got this feeling, I had been dating a guy, and I was supposed to go out, we were going to spend the day out having fun, and, you know, we were going to go on like some big springtime date. And it was a Saturday afternoon, and I said, you know, I think we're supposed to go to that meeting in Williamsburg at 2 o'clock. And he was like, why? And I said, I don't know, but I think we should go. What do you think? He said, let's just try, and then we'll see what happens. And we went there, and I can't really say exactly who was there, but a very famous person was there who I love. And admire a great deal for his musical ability, and I nearly like fell out of my chair, and I thought, oh, holy shit, like this is amazing. You know, and so that was one where I was kind of excited about that. You know, I've had other times where I have gone out and done things, and the results haven't always been that awesome. You know, it says we might, you know, have absurd actions and ideas. You know, we can do things that don't necessarily make sense. But if I'm willing to follow this intuitive sense that I have, that I'm developing still today, that I hope I never stop developing, that I continue to grow into, if I'm just willing to do that, I'm able to see all kinds of really neat things happen. And I'm going to be honest with y'all for a minute right now, real honest. And lately, this has not been awesome for me. I went through a period of sobriety at around, I don't know, 6-7 years sober, where I would get up every morning, and I would sit quietly, and I would read my book, and I would go through my day, and I don't know, I'd go outside to smoke a cigarette or something. It'd be like 10 o'clock, and I could just sense that I was being directed. I don't know if any of you have ever experienced that before, but it is an amazing feeling to know that you're being directed. And it would be something silly, like I'd just be walking to the trash can and be knowing that that was exactly what I was supposed to do. It's bizarre. And recently, in the past I'd say a couple years, maybe longer. This practice has not produced those kinds of results. It's easy for me to stop. There was a time when I couldn't go 2 days. Now if I do 2 days in a row of this, it's good. I went through a whole period where I would do it Monday through Friday because I really needed God's will at work. But on the weekends, I'm sleeping in, you know? And then I went through a phase where I don't really need to do this at work because everything is okay, but on the weekend, I better sit quietly and do this. And now I realize that I need to do this on a regular basis, but I am still extremely undisciplined. So sometimes my meditation doesn't look exactly like what's in this book. A little bit later, it suggests some other things that you can try. And sometimes I have done that. But I continue to test my thinking, you know. I'll be driving. I had something happen at work not that long ago. I was out of town. A woman had helped me and filled in for me while I was gone. And I was driving down the road. It was a Monday night. And I thought, you know, I need to get her something. I need to thank her for helping me, even though I didn't want to. I don't want to. I'm like, well, of course you're going to help me. I wasn't there. Somebody's got to do my job. And but she was nice, and she was filling in for me. And despite my own uncomfortable emotions that I had about it and some weird fears and stuff like that, I went ahead and did it anyway. And then I questioned myself. Should I have done that? Should I have done that? And it's important for me sometimes to remember that God gave me a brain to use. And when I have that intuitive thought and I go ahead and do that thing, it's okay. Because it was God's will. We'll just put it at that, you know. So I've heard a long time in AA, act as if, you know, fake it till you make it. And then somebody says, well, act as if. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? And then I realized that in a reading from another thing I do, it said, act as if everything happening around you is God's will, because it is. And so sometimes, even if it's uncomfortable for me, which I hate, I do not like to be uncomfortable, and I am uncomfortable a lot right now, I have to act as if it's God's will, because it is. And showing up for that every day and being willing to forces me to do this. And forces me to rely on God, because of my own power, I would be setting things on fire. I would be doing insane things and hurting people. And this conscious contact with God helps me to tap into just enough power to not set the world on fire. And I need that. Maybe y'all don't, but I do, because I will hurt you. I will hurt you. And won't even recognize that I did it until, I don't know, years later. Or never. Because that's who I am. And doing this helps prevent that. Level me out. So, I talk too much.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go to page 87. We're on page 87. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day, and our next step is to be that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for others, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why.
Well, I really like that part, that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be. You know, not just in the morning, not just when I'm reading this, not just when something bad happens, but, you know, throughout my day. Because I need constant supervision is the way I like to look at it. You know, it's amazing how quickly it can change where I'm, you know, having a good day and it's sunny out and I'm on my way to work, and then one little thing happens to threaten, you know, my instincts, so to speak, either financially or I get fearful. And, you know, that any kind of serenity that I had acquired from this process in the morning just completely goes out the window. And I know through this process and being able to pause and ask God for help, and not open my mouth or retaliate, that has saved me so much grief. And even, you know, within the past year, I've gone through some things this past year, you know, that I've never gone through. So sober, drunk, it's just something I've never gone through. And, you know, it has to do with being resentful. And I never had the experience of, you know, you make amends to someone and you go on and you don't have to interact with them. So it can be pretty easy when that happens. My brother is autistic, and he comes up with the best things ever. And a few weeks ago, he gets in a lot of arguments with my stepmother, who's an active alcoholic and somewhat, I think some dementia has set in, and within 2 minutes they're at each other's throats, and he walks out and everyone's upset. And he called me and he said, "Jada, Priscilla is doing so much better." And I thought that maybe she went to rehab, or maybe, you know, she got some counseling or medication. And I said, "Really? That's so good." He said, "Yeah, I don't talk to her anymore." And I love that. So yeah, if I can, you know, make amends and you know, pray for someone else, and that resentment kind of fades and I don't have to see him anymore, I love that person. But that's not reality for me a lot of times. I work with a lot of nasty, sick people, you know, and I have to deal with some people that I will deal with the rest of my life that I don't particularly care for. And that's why, you know, this paragraph, that I have to ask God to show me what my next step is to be. And again, sometimes that's just shutting my mouth. Or like I did in the beginning, like one day at a time with my drinking. Sometimes it's like, okay, I'm not going to say anything until 5 o'clock at night. I'm not going to say anything for an hour. Or I draft an email, and sometimes I save it to the drafts before I send it. You know, it's amazing how sometimes, you know, I just don't think. I just don't think of how my actions or what I say or my behavior, how that's going to affect others, you know. But I do find when I'm try to practice this, you know, conscious contact with God, that my thoughts and my actions are just so different, you know. And my natural reaction to a lot of situations has just drastically changed, because I believe, you know, because of God. There's been situations where I just have not reacted the way that I know I normally would. And I know that that is God doing for me what I cannot do for myself. And it's interesting to see, you know. It's interesting to see with myself and, you know, just my reaction again to problems. But I do definitely ask for freedom from self-will, you know, because I tend to not think about others. I'll do what I want to do and pay for it later. You know, there was kind of mixing things up, but just something that came to my mind with the ninth step. There was a person on my ninth step amends where I was not ready to make amends to them because I knew I wasn't done messing with them. And I knew, well, if I'm going to make amends, I know I'm just going to do it again, so why would I make amends? You know, and I have to ask God constantly for freedom from self-will, for doing what I know is the right thing to do that I don't necessarily want to do. because I don't just naturally want to do the right thing, even when there's a reward for it, like going to the gym. I always feel great. I never leave the gym and say, oh my God, that was horrible. I feel like crap. But for some reason, I don't want to go. Or a lot of times with meetings, I got better stuff to do. I just don't want to go. But every time I leave a meeting, I feel better. So that shows me that I don't always make the best decisions. I don't always want to do the next right thing or what's best for me. And I do know that God knows what is best for me if I can live his will. Thanks.
Thank you.
I just had potato chips, bean, and chocolate eggs for dinner. So I don't know if I want to really talk about healthy choices. But I, whatever. It's okay. The start of this paragraph says we usually conclude the period of meditation, which means that maybe right before this I'm supposed to meditate. So, after I read the paragraph before, I set a timer on my phone for 5 minutes, and I turn my phone over so I'm not ticking down the time, which I have been wont to do, and I sit. That's painful for an alcoholic. An untreated alcoholism, or who has something on their mind, or who doesn't, it's just breathing, really, to sit quietly for 5 minutes. I can do it occasionally for longer than that, but right now we're doing 5 minutes. We're practicing five. And what I have to do is things like count my breathing. And I breathe in for 4 breaths, and I breathe out for 4 counts. And I breathe in for 6 counts, and I breathe out for 6 counts. And I work up to 8 just to calm my body down. That helps to calm my brain down. And I sit quietly. The thoughts come. And somebody said, just imagine they're elephants and let them pass right through. Just let the circus go by and keep on sitting there. And that's hard for me, so I count. That's what I do. I can't help it. I have done different forms of meditation. I have done drawing meditations. I have done writing meditation. I have done one meditation that I really like that I don't practice enough of is walking. A walking meditation where I'm just quiet and in nature. I think meditation and the realm of the spirit is exactly what it says in the second step. I think it's all-inclusive, never exclusive. I think any time that I am being quiet and seeking God, I am in a form of meditation and prayer. So, in the morning, I have to count, though, because my brain's going 100 miles an hour and drinking coffee and thinking about everything I gotta do. And that can make me start to spin. But the prayers before have prepared me to sit quietly. I have also found it helpful at times to make a to-do list and to put things on the list like carry the vision of God's will into all of my activities today. Those are things that I have tried. And then I say these prayers. And I love what Jada said about I need specific prayers, because that's exactly what I say. God, please show me all through the day what my next step is to be. And I ask that I please be given whatever I need to take care of such problems. Please free me from self-will. And then it says don't pray for yourself. So I used to do these long, elaborate prayers for everyone I knew. I pray for so-and-so and for their health and their well-being and blah, 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 blah. And I pray for so-and-so and I pray for them at work and I pray for this and I pray for all this stuff. And it was me going to Santa Claus with my wish list for everyone I knew to be happy. And unfortunately, that didn't work very well. So occasionally, it's still beneficial for me to turn my thoughts to others. And so I just give a list. God, I pray for, my friend so-and-so, my boss, this, that, where I work, whatever. I just give a list, and then I go on. And just kind of thinking about someone else helps a little for maybe, millisecond. And then while I'm saying their name, I'm thinking about them, and then it quickly turns back. But it's just something to try, you know. It's something that I'm willing to try. And that's what this is about. It's about practice and try. Just keep practicing. Just keep trying. Just keep seeking. We don't get the answer and we're done, and we're just going to continue to look. We're going to continue to practice. We're going to ask God to show us new things that we can do. And when we're totally nuts, we can go back to the basics, which is also really beneficial. No matter how long you've been sober, 1 day, 1,000 days, it doesn't matter. This works, I promise.
Thank you.
So I'm still on page 87. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in the morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we've been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer.
I remember when I first read that paragraph, wondering when circumstances would ever warrant me praying or meditating with someone. I was very uncomfortable, you know, with any kind of prayer, any kind of meditation. I used to, you know, when the meeting closed with the Lord's Prayer, I either wouldn't hold hands or I would hold hands and not say anything because I was uncomfortable. I was embarrassed. I was raised Catholic, but I had gone to other churches before, and, you know, people would ask me, can we pray with you? And it's like, absolutely not. Absolutely not, you know. And I remember drinking, you know, going out with, visiting some of my customers in the South, and we'd be at lunch, and they would grab our hands and say, well, we're going to say a prayer. I'm like, you're what? I had a very strange experience with this because I was sponsoring a woman who asked if she could pray with me, you know, besides the third step prayer that we did say together. And it was, I think, the first time that I had prayed with someone and wasn't uncomfortable. And now it's kind of like second nature, you know. I pray with a lot of my friends. I can't say I necessarily have meditated with any of my friends. But I guess I say that because so much changes through this process, and my willingness to try this when it's uncomfortable and do the things that are uncomfortable, you know, was so important to be open-minded about this. And it's, you know, meditation, I do yoga and I meditate obviously in yoga, but the prayer of St. Francis is one prayer that I like to use to meditate on. Also these other two passages that we had already read, you know, just reading it slowly, thinking about what I just read. And memorizing a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. And I do read other literature. You know, there's several meditation books that I read. And to me, I don't always, like, read it, and then even sometimes I don't even understand what I read or really even think I retained it. I try to take maybe, like, one sentence and, again, just kind of meditate on and think about it. And that's why I like the 24-hour book, because the, you know, the first one is typically about alcoholism, the second is like a meditation for the day, and the third one is a prayer. And I love the prayer because it's like 4 words long and I can remember it. So I'm not that bright. So it needs to be simple for me, you know, and sometimes when I'm meditating, again, if I'm not thinking about myself, that to me is a form of meditation, or just breathing. You know, when I get anxiety or I get worried, it's amazing that I forget to breathe. It's amazing that someone has to tell me, like, okay, calm down and breathe. It's like, isn't that just a normal bodily function? But apparently not for some of us. So I like this paragraph because it encourages me to be open-minded. You know, there's a church I do belong to that I've been going to for 4 years, which I wouldn't be caught dead in a church. I felt so guilty that even walking into a church, I thought it was gonna burn down. And you know, and I probably the first 6 months getting sober, when I would go, I would just sit there and cry the entire time, and I really couldn't tell you why. And I would claim that I didn't believe in God, yet I was so angry. And it's like, well, how are you angry at a God you don't believe in?
Okay.
And one more thing about this, you know, because I am undisciplined and I need to be held accountable, it's amazing that a lot of girls that I sponsor, they remind me to do this. Or in me telling them to do this, it reminds me to do it, because I can't sit here and say, well, you know, did you read this morning? If I didn't, did you meditate today? I can't say that if I didn't. Well, I can, but I'll feel real bad about it. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you. I love how it says, a priest, a minister, or a rabbi. I feel like he's setting me up to tell a joke. a priest, a minister, or a rabbi walk into a meeting. You know, I was asked to join my sponsor in morning meditation, and she walked me through this. She showed me how to do it. I'm stupid, you know, I'm a little spiritually slow. I'm a little on the slow side. And so having somebody, you know, do this with me on the phone was really helpful, because she showed me how to do it. And I'm spiritually slow. You know, I'm kind of quick at other things, but not this. And so it was really beneficial to me to have her do that with me. I have gone on trips, AA workshops, that kind of thing, and we've done this together in the hotel room before we go out and start the day and do the things, you know, that we're going to do that day. And it's kind of cool, you know. There's something about meditating with people, and not necessarily in this context, that brings you closer to them. And I can remember I was dating this guy, and the same guy went to that crazy meeting on a Saturday afternoon, and it was Holy Week. And I didn't know what Holy Week was, okay? I was not raised in any specific religion that got all into Holy Week or anything, so I just didn't know what it was. And then I had an experience where I had my own personal experience with that, which doesn't have anything to do with AA. But so anyway, he says to me, I go to the church on Monday, Thursday. I call it Monday, Thursday. I don't think that's how you say it. But you go and you do some night watch thing. You sit in the church all night and be quiet on the night before Good Friday. And so he said, do you want to come with me? And I said, well, okay. You know, I think I'm going to go there. And I say, oh, okay, I'm going to get really spiritual. And I know that God is going to touch me while I'm doing this Monday, Thursday thing. And we sat there for an hour on a Thursday night. I don't know, it was 11 o'clock or something. And when I left there, I didn't feel very close to God, but I felt very close to Him. My friend. And we didn't even talk. Nothing happened. We just sat there. He was reading some biblical stuff. He had some prayer book that he read. I didn't have anything. And I just sat there. But through that process, we became closer. And so sometimes I feel like things, you know, uncommon sense becomes common sense. So if I'm just willing to practice something that doesn't even make any sense, you know, go sit in the church at midnight for an hour with your boyfriend, you know. Not long after that, God became my boyfriend. So he's my boyfriend, and I can explain that another time. But just being able to do that was really amazing. So I would encourage any of you to just be, you know, willing to do things that sound bizarre, because they might be really awesome. You just never know. And you might meet somebody that you didn't know you could, you know, you might experience something that you thought was closed off to you. And that's what I thought. I very much understand going to church and crying every day for, you know, forever. You know, and I didn't know why I was crying all the time every time I went there, but I knew I did. I knew that I had, like, I was in this crazy group with people very, very, very early in sobriety, and it was some religious thing. And they asked us to do something at the church, and we were supposed to be all, you know, they're all serious and pious and everything. And I got in there and laughed all the time at the front of the church. And I felt so ashamed about it that later, when I would go to church, I would just cry. I would think, you know, I can't be you. I can't act like you people. I can't live up to what you guys are selling me. So thank God most of my church experience really involves Alcoholics Anonymous. So I go to church all the time. It's just for AA. So I don't have to worry too much about that and about the rules and all of those different things. I'm just able to be there, you know. And I go any church now, and I don't have to feel as, you know, apart. I don't have to feel so separated from the Spirit, because I know the Spirit is within me and you and everywhere, and the church is a building where I can go and celebrate that. And we do that here. Every night that we come to Alcoholics Anonymous, we're celebrating the fact that we are sober today, and we're here to help others. What a testament, you know. What a joy to be a part of that, and to know that that is what really the Spirit does for us. It keeps us sober and helps us to help you stay sober. I don't think I could really ask for anything more than that. I don't know. Oh, God, we do.
Thank you. Sorry. Okay, we're going to wrap it up. We're still on page 87.
I always think we're going to get so long.
As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We don't tire so easily, for we're not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does. We're just on 88, the last paragraph. We alcoholics are undisciplined. We let God discipline us in the simple way we've just outlined. But this is not all. There's action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12.
Okay, so if y'all want to wrap it up.
Wrap it up.
Wrap it up. You know, I remember when I first getting sober, just how tired I was, and exactly for the reason that this, you know, what we just read talks about. I was always in a state of excitement, some drama going on, some problem. I don't think I knew how to function if there wasn't a problem, and if there wasn't one, I was going to create one. You know, just constant fear, always worried, always feeling terrible about myself, and I was always very tired. You know, because I was, like it says, burning up energy foolishly, as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit me. And I love that it says it works, it really does. I remember the first time reading that as well, just that it was almost like a promise, like, okay, if I do this stuff, you're telling me it works. I guess I'll try it and see if you're right. And I tried it once and it didn't work. No, but and again, we alcoholics are undisciplined. I'm extremely undisciplined. I always have been. I kind of have always done what I wanted to do. You tell me to go left, I go right. I'm not one of these people. I hear about people that come in the program and they just, I guess they say it's because they were desperate enough, but I felt I was very desperate, but they say they're desperate enough to follow everything their sponsor told them to do. And I was like, what is that like? I mean, I know that I wanted to follow everything that I was told to do, but I always think that I have a better way or that this stuff doesn't apply to me. And I have to remember that, I am undisciplined and I have to allow God to discipline me through this process, through the steps, through practicing this 11th step. And I don't do it perfectly like I have said. But the very fact that I'm sitting here reading this, and that's the beauty of meetings is, a lot of times we'll hear a topic, the exact one that we need to hear, and we realize how, I'll realize how I'm kind of off on something and how I need to get back into doing this or doing that. And one last thing I will just say about meditation, especially as a newcomer, it was very hard for me to sit. It was very hard for me to comprehend what was even being said in meetings. And I felt like my the only conscious contact I had with God sometimes was in an AA meeting for that hour when maybe I heard the word God 3 or 4 times because I wasn't hearing it anywhere else. And that to me was my beginning, in building a relationship with God. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you.
It works. It really does.
That's all I'm going to say.
Is
it's time
it?
To go home. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You were.
I love you. Really appreciate your experience and your honesty in it. Thank you so much for being here. Okay, we're going to pass the 7th tradition basket. AA ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the 7th tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And we would like to take any announcements having to do with the good of AA from other groups, if anybody has one tonight. Okay. We are having our supper and a speaker on May 18th. Supper's at 6, the speaker's at 7 in this room. Alcoholics Anonymous is Simple Actions. It's a home group. Alcoholics Anonymous is a group, but if you're interested in joining, you should talk to the person next to you. This is a home group, and if you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting, if you would all raise your hands, home group members. And also, if you're here tonight and this is your very, very first meeting, or you're pretty new to Alcoholics Anonymous, we really want to be able to greet you and help you get a little at ease. And we can't promise that'll happen right away, but we will help you do that. So if you'd like to introduce yourselves, we'd be happy to greet you tonight. Does anybody want to introduce themselves as new and Alcoholics Anonymous? Yes, ma'am.
My name is Jody, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jody.
Hey, Jody.
Welcome. It's my second meeting today.
So. Awesome.
yesterday, so clarified that.
Excellent. Well, that's a good pattern you got going on there. That's a trend, you know. Two is a trend. So you're doing it. Who else? Nobody else. Okay. Well, welcome to you. We do have newcomer packets on our literature table over here. They're red. So please do, somebody, Leanne was sitting next to you. She'll make sure you get one of these. And I'm sure all those ladies sitting around you will be happy to give you their phone number. And then you have to use it. That's the other part. Okay. And as I said, there's a literature table over here, and books are priced out. The folding stuff is for free. Please help yourself. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, don't delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, if you wouldn't mind raising your hand. If you do have questions or would like to get some additional information about sponsorship in AA, we do have a gentleman and a lady that are going to be up here tonight. Jason and Ryan are going to be here at the front of the room. Ryan, are you here? Oh, it's Jill. Sorry. Thank you. Jill. Raise your hand, Jill. Jill and Jason. And they're going to be up here at the front of the room. Don't be shy. Please do come up and talk with them. Smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All the meetings that we do here are audio recorded, and those recordings and any upcoming events are posted on our website, which is simpleactions.net. And again, thank you so much, ladies, for being with us tonight. Shy about coming up and thanking our speakers and chatting with them a little bit. They did make the effort to come over here and share with us tonight, so let's show our appreciation for them. And who's going to read 164 tonight?
David.
Alcoholic and
educated. David.
Our book is meant to be suggestible. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Amen. Thank you very much. And for anybody that would like to join us, we stand and say our Father in heaven.
Dinner. Yeah. I know. I always forget dinner.
And we do go to dinner at Plaza del Sol, 20th and 22nd. And if you need any more details about that, just ask for the home group members.
Yeah, please do. They have great chips and salsa. Okay. So, Catherine, how about leading us out?
Who kept us sober today?
Our Father, who art in heaven. Hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.